Emma Dang, who's who's going to give her a talk now.
Hi everyone, I'm Emmy Dang from University of Georgia. My research is about assessing fragile site density and contaminant desorption in hyperalkaline weathered heifer sediments. So just a brief introduction of Hanford site. Hanford site is located in the southern part of Washington State, and it was selected to produce plutonium during World War II. So as you can imagine, a lot of waste were generated at that time. And in the case of those highly radioactive and hyperalkaline wastes, they were stored in 177 underground tanks, just like the ones you can see in the pictures. These tanks were originally built to last at least 500 years, but for some reason they just failed. So the leaks were first suspected in 1956 and confirmed in 1959. This is just a figure showing that cesium leaking situation beneath one of the tank farms. And here comes the important part of this research. When the heifer sediments and the leaked hyperalkaline waste contact, they form some new minerals, and most of them are feldspathoids and zeolites. And it is known that there are a lot of contaminants such as cesium or its accompanying ion nitrate in the sediments, and these new kinds of new form minerals can trap the cesium and nitrate. In other words, it could serve as the long-term dissolution source. But however, the long-term fat of cesium or nitrate in these kind of new form minerals is still largely unknown. That's why the existing models still cannot well address the impact of these kind of new form minerals. Okay, since we know they can be trapped, but where can they be trapped? Like, where is cesium's favorite spot? This is the template of layers of clay minerals. Basically, there are three sites for ion sorption. The first one is the planar site, which is just the regular exchange site. And the second one is the fray edge site, which is the wedge shape zone between the expanded layer and a non-expanded layer. And the third site is just the interlayer sites. And for those hydrated cations like calcium, sodium, they tend to stay at the hydrated interlayer sites. And for contaminants such as strontium, they can be exchanged or sorbed on the regular exchange sites. But for cesium is poorly hydrated, so they tend to go to the fray edge site first before they will migrate to other planar sites or interlayer sites. In other words, the fray edge site has the higher affinity to cesium, so it is better for us to understand the fray edge site density so that we can well predict how mineral release cesium over time. And since now we know that it can be trapped, where it can be trapped, the problem becomes that can they be released? And in the previous work, Thompson et al. 2010, they already leached the Hanford sediments for a short-term period, which is only up to 600 pore volumes. And according to their data, we know that cesium and nitrate can be released, which means due to limited data, we still cannot know the mechanism of their release. So we plan to extend these leaching period so that we can know the mechanism of release. We also suspect that there are two ways for their release. The first one is the nitrate feldspathoid dissolution, and the second one is due to ion exchange. So to clarify these two mechanisms more, if the cesium and nitrate can be released by a nitrate feldspathoid dissolution, that means they can be released as the minerals are dissolving away. But if they can be released by ion exchange, let's say if we have potassium chloride in sediments, and then potassium chloride can just go into the minerals and exchange out cesium nitrate as a pair. So here comes our goal. According to answer the questions above, our research mainly focuses on two parts. The first part is to estimate the contribution of fray edge site density to cesium sorption. Our approach is just to directly measure the fray edge site density and maybe use the TEM image as a supporting material in the future. And the second part is to clarify the mechanism of cesium desorption, like whether it's due to mineral dissolution or it's due to ion exchange. Our plan is to conduct a very long-term leaching, which is 3 months long, until there is no nitrate detectable in the effluents. In other words, we plan to understand the mechanism of cesium sorption by tracking the loss of its accompanying ion nitrate. So the first one, measuring the fresh cell density, we use three methods to measure the FES density. The first method is the AGTU method, and because some of the literature have already raised some concern about this method, that's why we modify this method into our second method. And then the third method is the flow through technique. So the first AGTU method, the idea is to use the AGTU method to block all the planar sites, and then we use cesium to sorb on the fret edge side. So the simple idea is that the amount of cesium sorbed on fret edge side would be the initial cesium minus the remaining cesium. But Zechariah et al. 2002 think that the AGTU might not effectively block all the planar sites, so that might cause us over-predict the fret edge side density. That's why we modify this method to our second method. The same procedure, we use AGTU block the planar side first, and then cesium sorb down fret edge side. And according to Zechariah 2002, we might have some cesium wrongly sorbed on the planar side. So here comes our first desorption step. We use calcium to displace the cesium that wrongly sorbed on the planar side. And then after that, we use potassium to extract the cesium sorbed on fret edge side just as a double check. So the idea changed to the amount of cesium sorbed on fret edge side would equal to the initial cesium minus the remaining cesium, and also minus that cesium that wrongly sorbed on the planar side. Ideally, this amount here would equal to the amount that extracted by potassium here. And the third method is the flow-through technique. We packed the sediments in this kind of little column, and here's the influent solution. We constantly introduced the calcium throughout the whole leaching so that the planar site can be blocked by calcium all the time. And then after that, we introduced cesium to that cesium sorbed on fret edge site. Then we stopped cesium. After a while, we introduced potassium to that potassium extract the cesium from the fret edge site. So here's the desorption figure for three cations. The x-axis is the pore volume, and left y is the calcium and potassium concentration, and right y is the cesium concentration. So at the beginning, we only introduced calcium. So you can see the concentration of calcium reach the influent concentration. And after that, we introduce cesium as well. So you can see the cesium concentration increased. And then we stopped cesium, so the cesium concentration decreased. And after that, we introduced potassium. So as the potassium concentration increased, you can see the cesium concentration increased too. So that's because potassium actually extracts the cesium from the fret edge site. So according to this figure here, we know that this method actually worked pretty well. And here's the result comparison from different FES measurements. This is the total CEC, and the shaded area is the fret edge side density in terms of the percentage of total CEC. So as you can see, we got similar numbers from the AGTU method and the flow-through technique. And they are pretty comparable with the values they got in the literatures. But for the AGTU method plus desorption steps, we got much lower number. And we suspect that is because we apply a drying step right before the desorption step. So the drying step might actually help to fix the cesium tightly on the fret edge side. So it is hard to extract all the cesium from the fret edge side. The second part is the very long-term leaching. We collected the sediments from the uncontaminated area, and then we contaminated the sediments with either low contaminant concentration or high contaminant concentration. And the reactions were last for either 6 or 12 months under either CO2-free or atmospheric CO2 conditions. And this is the mineral formation under different contamination situations. So as you can see, low contaminant treatments, we have sodalite, which is nitrifuel spathoid form. And then at the high treatments, we have chabazite, which is zeolite form under your CO2-free or atmospheric CO2 condition. And today we'll mainly focus on the low treatments because we are discussing the cesium and nitrate release from the nitrifuel spathoid. So in the end, we'll have 8 kinds of reactive sediments, and they were packed in these little columns for the leaching experiments. These are the four kinds of low treatments we're going to discuss later. Here's a picture showing the leaching experiments. So these little columns were subjected to the three-month long-term leaching with the Hanford bag-bomb pool water. and the effluents were collected every 3 days. So in the end, the nitrate was analyzed by a nitrogen analyzer, and the main contaminants were analyzed by ICP-MS, and the mineral composition was done by XRD. So here's the accumulative nitrate release from the very long-term leaching. X-axis is the pore volume, and the y-axis is the cumulative nitrate release. So you can see after the very long-term leaching, the nitrate was leached out more than 50% from four kinds of low treatments and also the uncontaminated sediments. And according to the remaining nitrate and remaining nitrate fields phosphate in the sediments, we will be able to calculate this figure. X-axis is the pore volume, and Y is the normalized ratio of remaining nitrate to remaining nitrate fields phosphates. And the blue dashed lines represent that if the nitrate was all leached out by mineral dissolution. And the red dashed line means that if the nitrate was all leached out by ion exchange. And the purple dots are our real data. So you can see, like, for these four kinds of flow treatments, our data shows that the nitrate was leached out more by ion exchange than by dissolution. Here's the cesium desorption from 6 month reaction high and low treatments. The x-axis is the pore volume, and y-axis is the cesium desorption. We also model the data by using crunch flow, which is the models they have been using on the Hanford sediments in the literatures. So for low treatments above, the above figure for low treatments, we will be able to fit the data pretty well by only changing the ion exchange parameters, and the release after the 1,000 pore volumes actually can be fully explained by ion exchange by release from the frayed edge site. But for the high treatments in the bottom one, we can't just fit the data by changing the ion exchange parameters. So we suspect that after 1,000 pore volumes, the cesium release might involve some kind of mineral dissolution. So the short conclusion is the AGTU method and the flow through technique can well constrain the FES density. So we feel pretty confident to apply these two techniques on the reacted sediments, because so far we only tried on the unreacted one. And second conclusion is that cesium release from the low treatments can be fully explained by ion exchange, and also nitrate release can happen without any mineral dissolution. So in the end, I want to thank all my committee, and also especially my advisor Aaron Thompson, and also Dr. Perdrill from University of Arizona. And I'll be happy to answer questions if there's time.
Yes. Thank you.